Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. NPR's newest show, Invisibilia, debuts January 9th. Invisibilia looks at the invisible forces that shape human behavior, like how do other people's expectations physically change your brain, and the impulse to put things into categories, or the meaning of dark thoughts. From some of the people who created This American Life and Radiolab, subscribe to Invisibilia on iTunes now and don't miss a single episode beginning January 9th. And that's the kicky music that means it is time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. On this week's show, it's our semi-traditional opener to the year, predictions and resolutions. We'll look at the ones we made last year, commit to some for this year, and show no fear at all about the fact that history suggests we're highly likely to be totally wrong. And as always, we'll close the show with what's making us happy this week. Before we get started here in historic Studio 44, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I read about books and comic books at the NPR website.
And Kat Chow, what do you do at NPR?
I'm a blogger and social media producer for Code Switch.
Well, it's wonderful to see all of you as we begin 2015. We've been away from the studio for a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. I am always excited to see all of your friendly faces, particularly for this often devastating, truth-telling episode. Now, Kat has the advantage of not having been on last year's show, so she cannot be graded. And I do, before we get started, I do have a brief update. I did hear back from our pal Trey Graham, who was here for last year's resolution episode, has since moved on from NPR to greener pastures and sunnier locales, from which he was sending pictures today, which I did not appreciate, as it's very snowy. And he said that at the moment he is preparing for his 10-day sailing trip in the British Virgin Islands.
Yeah. Wow. This is, I just want to assure people, this is not our equivalent of saying that we sent Trey to a nice farm family.
he really is.
This is all
taking,
true.
He's really taking a sailing trip in the British Virgin Islands. And he said that I could wave on his behalf. Mm. And so consider him to be waving smugly. Mm-hmm. And that is the Trey update. Mm. But now we're going to move on first and talk about our resolutions for 2015. And before we do that, as we go around, we will also be accountable for our resolutions in 2014. Now, Stephen Thompson, I believe we have some tape of your 2014 New Year's resolution.
First of all, specifically, yes, I want to embrace the cloud. That's one thing I have not done at all. I want to put my music in the cloud, not throw it away in any other form.
Do you know what that means?
I don't entirely. but I am going to, finally, this is the year. I can feel it. DVR, cloud. But on a more general level, I really want to put myself in more of a position where I can relax and consume entertainment and compartmentalize out all the things that I usually do while I consume entertainment. I spend way, way too much multitasking. One of the great things about going to a movie theater is you can't do other things while it's happening. And I want to try to set aside some time specifically for the specific enjoyment of more pop culture.
Boy, I forgot you said that thing about how you were gonna stop doing other things while you're watching TV, which is hilarious.
While you're sitting here, you are whittling.
So how'd that go for you?
I think the important thing here is that I was incredibly consistent.
Yeah.
And I would like to be applauded for a perfect 0-for-3.
Mm-hmm.
I have done none of those things.
Yeah. Didn't embrace the cloud?
I mean, I remembered making that whole cloud pronouncement. What's interesting about the sitting still while enjoying entertainment, which is really quite a thing to, like, promise you'll do, is I not only failed spectacularly, I immediately forgot that I had made that resolution. Mm-hmm. And I think that might be part of the problem. I've embraced other technologies. I've got a Roku, I've got a Chromecast.
You've got a two-wheeled bicycle now?
I use it's a two-wheeled bicycle, but it's got one like the really big tire and yes. then the little one.
A penny farthing.
So I've embraced a lot of technology. I've also purged my house of almost all tape. I no longer use a VCR.
I thought you were talking like masking tape, and I was like, that's just not practical.
I'm a staple man. but anyway, yeah, I just completely bombed out. I think it's interesting that I'm more accurate in my predictions than I am in my promises.
Mm-hmm.
But for 2015, let's make this about the future. I don't want to talk about the past. I don't want to talk about all those mistakes that I made. Let's just forget about those. And talk about our promises. First promise, I will not get a DVR. I will probably not embrace the cloud. I will not sit still and enjoy entertainment on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've got personal resolutions and pop culture ones. For me, my personal resolution is I do intend to quit drinking Diet Coke once and for all and to switch to something that is... more water-based, something that is better for my nerves and innards.
Gotcha.
Wonderful.
So this is a resolution that might be familiar to Glenn Weldon. We've talked in the past about how I don't read a lot of books, and that's another thing that I don't want to say I've given up on it because I do believe that I will start picking up books, but I'm going to stop promising that I'm going to pick up
books.
Good. But I want to get back into writing them.
Mm-hmm.
I used to edit a lot of books when I worked at The Onion. I worked on a lot of these comedy books as a copy editor. I edited a book of interviews called The Tenacity of the Cockroach for the AV Club, and I really liked doing that stuff. Now, that's how I got out of the habit of reading books in the first place, was spending too much time writing them. But I think if I'm not going to become the person I want to be who reads books, I want to at least get back into the craft of writing them. It occurred to me that, like, I'd really like to try working on books now that the book industry has collapsed.
Yeah, good timing.
And so I want to try my hand at selling way fewer of them.
That's cool. All right. So your resolution for 2015 is get back into working on books.
To at least get the ball rolling.
Like, outstanding.
I don't think I will complete
sure.
the writing of a
no,
book in 2015.
I
want to start using those muscles again.
Good, solid.
Good plan. That mm-hmm. is solid. All right. Glenn Weldon, resolutions for 2015. But before that, let's look back upon your resolution for 2014.
The main resolution here is, I sit before you a newlywed. I got the giggles, I got the whole newlywed schmear, the giggling and the blushing and the UTI. I got the whole newlywed thing. But I, like most Americans, compare my worth, my relationship's worth, to that of celebrity couples. We
sure,
all do this.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So by that metric, which is the only metric that matters, we're 6 days into this marriage. Now, we've been together 15 years, but society starts counting it now.
Right.
So now I'm 6 days in, which means I'm better and more deeply committed to my partner than Britney Spears and Jason Alexander were, who lasted 55 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't reached, at this point, 6 days in, the amount of dedication that Dennis Rodman and Carmen Electra have enjoyed, because they stayed together 9 days. The next milestone is Mario Lopez and Ali Landry at 18 days. Then here's the thing I want to do, is get past the Kardashian. I want to outlast a Kardashian with this marriage and not contribute to the divorce rate by lasting 55 days, which is what Kim Kardashian and Chris Humphries lasted. And then once we're past that, then it's smooth sailing until 107 days when Nicolas Cage and Lisa Marie Presley lasted. So we can outlast Nicolisa. I think
wow.
we are set.
So
that's my resolution.
Wait, so we need to combine your so Gloust. We're going to refer to you guys as
Glaustino. Don't do any of that. But yes, that's it. So that's my resolution.
It's going to be a hashtag before I'm out of the studio.
Not become a statistic.
So how'd it go? Are you a statistic?
Well, you notice that I chose I consider that a pop culture resolution because, again,
right.
the metric is pop culture.
Right.
Sure.
I was looking back at this show's long history of resolutions that fail, of stomach hollowing failure.
Yeah.
And I decided to aim low and never try. The Weldon family crest is aim low, never try.
Yeah.
And we did it. we lasted longer than Nicolisa. We lasted longer than Pamela Anderson and Kid Rock, longer than Drew Barrymore and Tom Green, longer than Elizabeth Taylor and Nikki Hilton, a little history there, longer than Jennifer Lopez and Chris Judd, and longer than Renee Zellweger and Kenny Chesney. So the next milestone is Mickey Rooney and Ava Gardner, a little over a year. That remains to be seen, but yes, so we did it.
You did it.
So I didn't fail.
You did it. And now you can get divorced.
Yeah, exactly right.
Okay, so 2015.
Every week I come into the studio, and at the top of the show, I say what? What do I say? I say...
You write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
But every week I say that, and every week I turn this humble studio, this humble historic studio, into a house of lies. Because it's been a while since I've done that. And, you know, I thought I knew why. I mean, I figured I had a long-term writing project that ended this year. The first 6 months of the year was spent finishing the book. And personally, me, on a long-term writing project, I don't read other things. I know writers who are smarter, better than I am, who crave reading something else besides what they're working on. I can't do that. I can't have other voices in my head besides the many that are already in there. And I also have another gig. I'm doing some punch-up for a radio show, writing jokes for them. That takes up some time. And also, after I turned in the book, I started playing video games again. And I figured that's it. That's why I haven't been reading. Because what's happened is I've fallen out of the lifelong habit of reading. It's very difficult to fall out of a lifelong habit, so I was trying to figure out why that happened, how that happened. It's not the long-term project, it's not the other side gigs, and it's not video games. You know what it is? It's podcasts. The amount, the sheer number and amount of podcasts that I listen to are giving me some of the pleasure that I got from reading. Because reading used to be the thing I would do when I wasn't doing anything else. It's, you know, before I went to bed, on commutes. Now that time is used up by listening to podcasts. And so I consider it kind of pop culture methadone, right? It tricks your body because some podcasts can be almost as immersive as the reading experience can be. It's not. It's nothing like it. But it can trick your body into thinking. It hits some of the same pleasure centers. Here's another thing. Similarly, writing dumb dad jokes on Twitter feels like writing. It isn't writing. Mm-hmm. It feels like comedy. It isn't comedy. Unlike stand-up comedy, it risks nothing. You're not putting yourself out there. And the writing goes away. It vanishes. But it makes your brain thinks you've just written something, when in fact all you've done is made a dumb dad joke on Twitter. So I'm not going to go cold turkey, because I get a lot of pleasure out of podcasts and out of Twitter, still do. I'll go lukewarm meatloaf on those two things. And I will commit, because a thing that's been lacking on this show in our resolutions and our predictions are metrics. So here's a metric. I'm going to read a book a week this year. 52 books. Now, that is far off my peak.
That's far off my career peak.
That's a solid one.
It's doable. It'll force me to do things like write that Twitter and podcasts sort of approximate. So that's it.
Week one, Runaway Bunny.
Yes, exactly.
Week two, Goodnight Moon.
Not going to stipulate what kind of books. Just going to say books.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Perfectly reasonable. Thank you, Glenn Weldon. Now, Kat Chow, you come to the table with a huge advantage.
Yes.
Which is you have a clean slate.
You're undefeated.
And it feels so good.
As far as we know, you keep all your resolutions.
I'm just a perfect human being.
You are. Mm-hmm. As far as we know, you've never dropped a resolution.
That's true. Okay. Haven't.
And so all we need you to do, we look at you and we say, since you clearly kept all the ones you had last year, how are you going to follow it up this year?
I'm going to follow it up this year by basically consuming things as a super fan would. I realized when I was thinking about me in the past 20-something years of my life, I've never really been a super fan of anything. Mm. And I was thinking, well, what is possibly the closest thing? And I realized Michael B. Jordan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, wow, there you go.
Okay,
good choice.
I finally finished Friday Night Lights.
Good for you.
I know. Yeah, we should talk about that at some other point. One thing that stuck out was Michael B. Jordan's performance. And then I kind of walked back and realized, okay, he was also in Fruitvale Station, which was my first encounter with him, where everyone was saying, oh, yeah, he was so good in The Wire. He was so good in Friday Night Lights. A couple weeks ago, I started watching The Wire. Oh my gosh, I cried.
Yeah.
That first season.
Yes.
But also, he's apparently in Parenthood, which I kind of watched a couple episodes of. It's streaming on Netflix. So Michael B. Jordan, as weird as it is to make a person be the object of my fandom, that can happen.
Well, I think what you're discovering is that if you find the right person, then that person becomes kind of a conduit into a bunch of other stuff. And that is definitely one of the functions of super fandom, is that you find your way through being a completist about one thing, yeah. even if it's a good enough actor, then you become a completist about Michael B. Jordan. You wind up watching Friday Night Lights and watching The Wire, and then you can pick somebody else on The Wire that you think is interesting, and then you can go and chase all the stuff that they are in, which could take you to some things that are not very good, but it could also take you to some things that are very
yeah,
good.
I think
exactly.
that's an excellent. I think that's an excellent resolution, though. I think that I remember sort of doing a similar process a few years ago with a band I love, and understanding that there are people who are obsessed with a lot of what you listen to does make you think about covering it a little bit differently.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. And then also another thing that I think I would like to start exploring are Korean dramas. I always hear a lot of people on Twitter talking about the different K-dramas that they're watching or getting into. And I know that there's such a big market for shorter episodes that get played on, you know, apps that you have. I want to just try out a couple, at least, and actually give it a full run, watch a whole series, watch mm-hmm. two whole series, and see what the whole buzz is. So if anyone has recommendations, send them my way.
Excellent. I bet there are people with recommendations. See, Kat came with some very
concrete... I thought about them.
They're yep. concrete resolutions. Now, I have found that concrete resolutions are a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because all that happens is that then people can find out whether you actually followed them or not. My first resolution last year was a renewal of a resolution from the previous year. Now, the previous year, this had been a 2013 resolution, was to get our friend Parul Sehgal to recommend 10 books to me that I would then read. We didn't do it, so I renewed it. I re-upped for 2014.
Like you checked it out at the library.
Exactly. I am happy to report that although I did not complete this resolution, I started this resolution. She did, in fact, recommend to me the book Department of Speculation, mm-hmm. which is something Barry also recommended at our live show in December at mm-hmm. 6th and I. And so I read that book. It is indeed wonderful. I have not finished that resolution, but I did undertake it, and I did do something specifically from it. And it was very much like her recommendation to me was not just like, oh, by the way. It was like, I'm supposed to be recommending books for this resolution thing.
Sure.
So it totally counts. So although we didn't finish it, I started it. And in 2015, I'm going to finish it.
Okay.
So that's A. Mm-hmm. That's part A. But I did have another resolution for last year. I have to figure out some freaking way to control the stuff on my desk. Or I am going to be crushed under a pile of books that I didn't even read. And that is going to be a sad end for me. But it's connected to the fact that I am just trying to wrangle way too much stuff. Yeah. I am trying to cover way too much territory. I am driving myself crazy worrying about what I'm missing and what I'm not seeing and what I'm not reading and what I haven't been to. This is my resolution. I am going to try to find something that I can abandon trying to wrangle.
Mm-hmm.
That I can say, I don't need to worry as much about that as I have in the past. Yeah. So here's the thing. After I made that resolution, totally forgot about it, except that it is something that I'm always working on. So as to the first part of it, which was sort of to get the stuff on my desk under control, I definitely have made some progress in that regard with some help from our super producer, Jessica Reedy, who, when she's not doing the show, helps me with some production stuff in the rest of my job, and who has essentially implemented a system of me being able to keep track of things. So that has actually happened, not by my doing, but mm-hmm. With some assistance, that has happened. In terms of less, I never really thought about it, but I saw a lot fewer movies this year. I felt much less obligated to go out and see, like, movies in quantity, like, mm-hmm. just to say that I had seen all the movies, which is kind of sad, but at the same time sort of had to happen. Because, interestingly enough, back on the books thing, although I only read the one book off of Parul's thing, I did do a lot more reading last year. I went to Book Expo. There was a lot more reading, particularly like over the last couple few weeks on the blog. I've done more writing about books. It's definitely something that I have been paying a little more attention to, and I wound up going and seeing fewer movies. So, you know, I don't know that I necessarily can say that I followed it exactly, but it is a continuing effort to try to pare down the things for which I feel responsible. So for 2015, on the personal side, and I've been telling this to everyone who will listen and many people who don't want to listen, It is to sleep more. I have suddenly started forcing myself to get an adequate amount of sleep, partly after seeing an incredibly terrifying Nat Geo special about people not getting enough sleep. So thanks to Nat Geo for that. But on the culture side, in addition to continuing with the reading and continuing with all that stuff, Stephen took one of mine, which is I want to think about books and writing something and mm-hmm. all that business. I'm supposed to be doing that, and I want to be working on that. And I want to continue with something that had been a 2013 resolution that I definitely did, and then I did not have it in the docket for this past year, but I'm going to put it back on the docket again, which is to continue to seek out work by people whose work I don't already know. Okay. That's kind of my cultural resolution. I realize these are a little nonspecific, but I couldn't find anything that was particularly like, I want to watch my whole way through some show. I'm not going to do that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I could stand here and say, like, I'm going to watch all of The Shield. I'm sure it would pay off. I'm sure I would enjoy it. I'm sure it's incredibly good. I'm not going to do it. So that is resolutions. And I'm sure that a lot of you can come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or on the blog at npr.org/PCHH and tell us about your resolutions for 2015. And now we're going to talk a little bit about predictions, because we also like to make some predictions, many of which are often hilariously wrong. But we're going to check up on our predictions and make a couple more. Stephen Thompson, I want to check out your prediction for 2014.
So I brought a couple of specific predictions just so we can laugh about how wrong they were. And I tried to go a little out on a limb with them. One is that Gravity will beat 12 Years a Slave for Best Picture.
Nice.
Because you can always bet on Hollywood movie magic.
Yeah.
The power of Hollywood.
They've been leaning toward the good but also crowd-pleasing in recent years as opposed to the brutal experience that is watching 12 Years a Slave.
And I think 12 Years a Slave might have peaked a little early. You know, there's also a horse racy quality that people like. My other one is even further out on a limb. It's Adele not going to put out an album this year.
Oh, really? See, that was one I was kind of thinking about because I've seen it on a lot of predictions lists.
Yep.
She's got a lot of free time on her hands.
I am going to predict that is going to be the detox, Dr. Dre detox of major pop bestsellers that everyone is waiting for. Go out on a limb. Now, a couple of more general things. And I think you're going to see, if nothing else, a lot more hand-wringing about what becomes of movie theaters.
Yeah. Okay.
I think you're going to see more and more that one of the next technological leaps that a lot of people are taking is toward the gigantic television, that eventually that is going to hit movie theaters very hard. And I think you're going to see a little bit more of a tipping point of that being a major, major point of discussion. If are movie theaters going to go the way of record stores and bookstores and a lot of places that people would go to consume entertainment? The other thing is kind of a companion to that. Over the holiday break, I went to a little party at a friend's house, and the big entertainment was everybody was going to sit down and watch the Beyoncé record. That album, when it came out, it really, because it was a visual album, because the way you really are meant to consume the Beyoncé album is by watching it, I think you may see more and more, and it would make sense for people to try to come up with more and more of these, trying to simulate the communal experience of everybody is watching the Super Bowl, everybody is watching the Oscars, everybody is watching the Olympics or whatever, of entertainment that the best way to consume them is in your living room with your friends.
Mm-hmm. So I would say a mixed record there.
I think they were noble in intent. Uh-huh. I was wrong about Gravity beating 12 Years a Slave, though it did win Best Director. Mm-hmm. I was completely 100% right about Adele not putting out that record in 2014, and that was a complete and utter hunch. There was no industry gossip to that effect. Mm-hmm. I just guessed it, and I guessed right. The movie theater thing...
That's
a glacial change.
I don't know that there was a big thing, but it definitely continues to be a thing people hand-wring over.
And then there were going to be lots of communal music experiences, lots of albums released as videos. I mean, I will say a lot of people spent all of 2014 watching the Beyoncé record.
Sure.
But I didn't really...
It didn't have a lot of imitators.
If anything, the big releases like Taylor Swift went in the other direction and released a very conventionally packaged... I mean, it was designed to be bought as a CD. She made a bunch of moves to get people to buy her CD, but it was not necessarily a big shared experience.
Yeah,
it amazed me that the Beyoncé record came out that long ago. It seemed like it had just come out. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
My knee's acting up. I'm old.
All right. So, Stephen, predictions for 2015.
It's a little bit general, but it's something that I've noticed as I've looked ahead to the various pieces of entertainment that are scheduled to come out, that are being talked about. I feel like 2015 is going to be a year where we have this conversation a year from now. We will have had many conversations about juggernaut fatigue. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about this from the standpoint of movies, which is fairly obvious, and from music a little less so. In the movies, you're looking at just gargantuan sure. event after gargantuan event. And like, we're going to be talking about, you know, will it break $500 million mm-hmm. In X number of time? I mean, you've got your Star Wars sequel, you've got your
Avengers
Age of Ultron, which if that doesn't make $1 billion is mm-hmm. going to be a disastrous problem. We're just going to be lurching from blockbuster to blockbuster, I think, more than usual in movies. Now, in terms of music, what I feel like we're going to see happen is a bit of a shift toward a bigger sound, a more of a rock sound. I remember when we watched the VMAs together, we were marveling over how few bands had any like guitars. Mm-hmm. It was so pop oriented that the only guitars were like Maroon 5 and 5 Seconds of Summer. Mm-hmm. So those are pretty light bands.
Yeah.
And looking at what we're going to be seeing in 2015, even just looking at the docket for the next few months, there's a new Slater Kinney record. There's this band called Screaming Females that I think is going to be big. That's like a big, awesome, just rock and roll record. You're going to see a new record by Modest Mouse, which is like a bigger sounding rock band. There are supposed to be these long awaited, just big rock juggernaut records from Van Halen and Tool and, you know, who hasn't put out a record in ages, and even Faith No More, I guess, is supposed to put out an album in 2015. And I think you're going to see a little bit more of a shift, even like Kanye West putting out a new record. Like Kanye West, the Yeezus record is such a big, loud, mm-hmm. abrasive record mm-hmm. that I would consider like a rock record in its own way.
Yeah.
It's produced very much from a rock mindset. And I think everything is going to feel bigger. And for a slightly more concrete prediction, since saying a lot of big movies are going to come out in 2015, not necessarily going out on a super wobbly...
Yeah, but you're specifically talking about juggernaut fatigue.
Right,
that's
sure.
different.
Right. Okay, then I will take a certain amount of credit for that when I'm inevitably right. Mm-hmm. The other thing is I predict a very rocky launch of the Stephen Colbert as a network late night host.
Interesting. Yeah.
I think that he's going to be in a completely different persona on a network with much, much, much higher expectations. We are so used to thinking of cable shows as having much bigger audiences than they actually have in terms of raw ratings. I love Stephen Colbert, but I think it's going to get off to a very, very wobbly start. I'm not going to predict that it gets like canceled quickly. I'm not predicting the Chevy Chase show here.
Right.
But I think that at the end of the year, there's going to be a lot of talk about like, what are we going to do with this? Because I think a lot is going to be invested in it, and I think there's going to be a steep drop off after it begins.
Yeah, I mean, we know who Jimmy Fallon was. We knew who Jimmy Fallon was before he got the show. We knew who pretty much everybody is,
right?
Except for the guy who's taking over the Late Late Show. We don't know who Stephen Colbert without the Stephen Colbert persona is. So yeah, I think there's going to be a rude awakening.
It's a very different animal, the mm-hmm. late night network talk show.
All right, thank you. Glenn Weldon, predictions from 2014.
Oh,
let's take a look back.
I know where this is going.
I'm going to predict that Amazing Spider-Man 2, top draw, followed by X-Men Days of Future Past, followed by Captain America the Winter Soldier, followed down below. Because so much of Guardians of the Galaxy, if you just look at it on paper, kind of goes in that Green Lantern direction. Mm-hmm. All the mistakes that Green Lantern made are in the DNA of this thing, although I do like the comic book series. I think Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be the toughest sell, so I think that's going to be the one that kind of languishes of these four.
Kind of okay. languishes.
How long have we been doing the show? 4 years?
We did four and a half.
4.5 years? Okay. I posit, I assay, that is the dumbest thing ever said on this show. The single dumbest thing ever. Languishes, I said. Languishes was the word I used for the top movie of the year at $333 million.
And then the second lowest was...
If you want to know what the actual order of those four movies were, simply take my list and turn it upside down. Guardians of the Galaxy at $333 million, Captain America Winter Soldier at $260, X-Men Days of Future Past at $234, and Amazing Spider-Man 2 at $203 million. Now, in my defense, I was coming to Guardians of the Galaxy knowing the book by Abnett and Lanning that I liked a lot, but which was Marvel cosmic space opera huge. Mm. It had some funny bits and some fun characters and a raccoon. It was also this huge, sprawling thing. What I didn't foresee was that when they were making Guardians of the Galaxy, and the trailers should have tipped me off, that they would go for a definite B-movie sensibility, right? A kind of a 70s gritty B-movie sensibility against the backdrop of this huge thing. And that's what did it. I think that's the secret of that movie.
Yeah, the thing I like about looking back at this prediction is that it's very easy when you spend a lot of time following these blockbusters through the year. You can get that feeling of like, well, it doesn't really matter what the movie is. People just go to the thing because the thing is the thing.
Yep.
I think this is one where in order to figure out how that movie beat your expectations, you have to go back to what the movie turned out to be.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you have to go back in part to how good the movie turned out to be.
Right.
And that actually worked to the benefit of the movie.
Right.
Which often feels like it's not a thing in blockbuster land. Like being good or bad, it's certainly true that being bad is not fatal. But that being good does you no good. And I think that is one where your prediction was not an unreasonable one based on what we knew at the time.
A completely reasonable one.
And part of why it beat that prediction was they made a really good movie.
Right.
And that helped the movie a lot.
Right.
And that movie overcame a bunch of obstacles. They put it out in late summer, which the previous summer had been death.
Yep.
Everything that came out in late summer died the previous year. It had a little bit of like a Howard the Duck meets John Carter vibe to it, where it could have easily gone off the rails. I think it was a fair prediction at the time, even though it was spectacularly hilariously wrong.
And what I also didn't foresee is that there was a lot of talk about a CGI raccoon, and that got embraced in a big way in the culture, not as nearly as much as Groot. Groot was the breakout character.
Yeah.
Nobody saw that coming.
No.
In my defense, again, I did say they're trying to humanize this film by putting Chris Pratt smack in the center of it, which is a very smart move. If anybody can do it, he can. And he did.
Mm-hmm.
I was wrong about Captain America Winter Soldier. I'm going to say that. I fully own that. I'm going to throw myself in the mercy of the court because I was wrong.
Yeah, that was not a prediction that worked out great for you, buddy.
Nope.
Not on paper. Okay, so predictions for 2015.
Okay, you'll be able
Did you want to rank the upcoming superhero movies?
Don't. But I do want to make a prediction that will be able to see if it worked or not very soon. On February 6th, a film called Jupiter Ascending comes out by the Wachowskis from an original screenplay. They're writing it and they're directing it. And here is the plot, such as it is. Unknown to Earth's residents, life on Earth has been seeded by alien royal families for the purpose of harvesting the evolved living creatures once they reach a Darwinian state of perfection to produce a type of youth serum that allows them to live forever. Mila Kunis stars as a janitor who is secretly an alien princess. I'm going to let us all just sort of marinate in that sentence for a while.
Yeah.
And Channing Tatum plays Kane. He's wearing Spock ears for this. He is a defective genetic splice, a half-albino with both human and wolf DNA, who has a tremendously powerful sense of smell that can trace a gene throughout the universe. So, so that's coming.
So what are you predicting?
The makeup of Channing Tatum, by the way, kind of misses Wolf and goes right to Jim Brewer's Goat Boy. like the surfer, stoner, blonde, hunky brother of Jim Brewer's Goat Boy. This has Fiasco written all over it. It's been delayed not once but twice.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming out in February in the dead of winter. It's not based on any pre-existing property at all. It's just coming straight from the Wachowskis' tortured brains. And what it has going for it is that the Wachowskis make idiosyncratic films,
yes,
let's put it that way. And the thing that they do uniquely is they make idiosyncratic, huge, expensive films.
Yeah.
So their vision is huge,
right,
and it's big. So, and any film that doubles down on the special effects as much as this film is, I mean, there's a certain kind of critic out there who professes a fondness for, you know, glacial existential dramas set in war-torn Finland, you know, the Winter of My Despondency, those kind of films.
I know some of those guys.
Right. They're going to hate it. They are sharpening their knives like it's a roast beast. And I am going to say, here's my prediction. In defiance of all laws of God and man and box office mojo, this film, top 10 film of 2015.
Wow.
Makes over $200 million.
Wow.
That's my prediction.
Love it.
I am foolhardy.
Love it.
I got nothing to lose. It's better to burn out than fade away.
I like it.
I'm doubling down on this. I think it's going to be dumb. I think it's going
to
work.
That's bold.
I think you're just trying to figure out how to not have the list from last year be the dumbest thing that's ever been on this show. That's what I think. And I think it might work.
I can dream.
But I love that prediction. Love it, buddy.
So you'll be going to see this movie 20 million times?
Mila Kunis plays a janitor who's secretly an alien princess.
But here's the other thing in support of your theory, though. Those are two leads who have both been known to elevate genre pieces and pieces that sound stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So I like a lot of things about that call. You go 10 million times and I'll go 10 million times. We'll meet back here in a year. All right. Thank you, Glenn Weldon. Kat Chow, now again, we have no predictions from last year with which to shame you. So we can only wonder what you see coming for 2015.
So in 2015, I think that Fresh Off the Boat is going to make some serious, serious waves. I've been waiting for it and waiting for it. The release date got pushed back again and again, and I think we're going to be seeing the first episode on February 4th.
ABC show, ABC new ABC comedy.
It's based off of the book by Eddie Huang, and it's about a Taiwanese-American family that moves from Washington, D.C. to Orlando, Florida. And it's set in the 90s, and it basically follows the story of, I think, 12-year-old Eddie Huang, who is played by Hudson Yang, dealing with a white Orlando suburb. He has an immigrant family. He's going through, I think, middle school. And it's hard. And it's a single-camera sitcom. And what I liked about it when I was watching the episodes is it really seemed to grow on me. And I think that Hudson Yang, I hope that we see a little bit more of him and his character, because I think I really believed him as a young Eddie Huang. Fresh Off the Boat, I have high hopes for it. I hope it's going to be great. I know that at least there's going to be some great discussion about it and more representation of Asian American actors. And maybe it'll be the year of the Asian American male on screen.
Cool. Are you predicting success or you're predicting that it's going to be good? Two different things.
I think that I'm predicting that it's going to be a slow boil.
Okay.
I watched the pilot, and then I thought the second and third episodes gradually got better. I don't know if it's going to become mainstream enough so that everyone's going to watch it, but, I mean, I already know that there's going to be a niche audience.
Mm-hmm.
Outstanding. I had a couple of predictions for 2014. Let's check them out. If you could make this the year of Chris Pratt, that would bring so much happiness to my little heart, because if you made like a really awesome romantic comedy that Chris Pratt was the lead in, you would access a part of my DNA that is being miserably neglected. And B is Jay Leno will not go quietly. And this is supposed to happen in like 2 months.
Right.
This is supposed to happen in like 2 months. And Jay Leno works on cars in his yard or something. I do not see that happening. It doesn't mean that I think he's going to suddenly say, I'm not leaving. It means I think he's going to get a show on another network, or he's going to announce that he's taking up, I don't know. I just don't get this whole, like, see you later. Like, this is not really a negative thing about him. As I understand it, he is a complete and utter workaholic and lives through doing this show all the time. And it's just very hard for me to believe that he legitimately intends to just, like, go be in Vegas. I just can't see him doing it. And along those lines, of course, Jimmy Fallon will be taking over The Tonight Show, which I predict will also be bumpy for the same reason it was for Conan, which is you can be popular at 12:30. You go to 11:30 and you're picking up kind of that more traditional Carson audience, bigger, broader. I predict that as much as I love that show, that it may have some issues at 11:30. So I think it may be easier than it was for Conan, but I wouldn't be surprised to see it be bumpy. Well, okay.
Pretty impressive.
Now the Fallon prediction, I actually haven't been following his 11:30 ratings that much.
Hmm.
I certainly haven't heard a lot about either, like, what a great, huge success it is or what a disaster it is. I have a feeling he's going along and it's fine, has been my sense.
Yeah.
However, on the other two, I'm just going to say I take full credit for having gotten two up, two down.
Yep.
I am right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
First of all, totally year of Chris Pratt,
okay,
the Lego movie,
definitely.
Guardians of the Galaxy, heading into other stuff that he keeps showing up in the Jurassic Park thing.
Yeah.
And he's like the king of cute pictures on Instagram. And come on.
It was the year of Chris Pratt.
It was the year of Chris Pratt. And is free of the network television obligation with the end of Parks and Recreation, which is terribly, terribly sad to me, but which I think just means there's just going to be more Chris Pratt for everyone. So I'm in favor of that, and I got it right. And in October, CNBC announced that Mr. Jay Leno was going to get a show where he talks about cars, which is exactly the kind of thing that I thought Jay Leno might do. Not going to go off and sit quietly in his house and not do television. Going to do a show, CNBC. He cannot get away from NBC Universal, and they cannot get away from him. So he has a show on CNBC, and I feel great about myself.
Yep. You did very well. I as much as it pains me to admit that you were right.
Yeah, I think you won.
No, I know. No, I did pretty well. So as I started to try to make predictions for this year, I realized that there is a part of me that wants to say something really optimistic. Like, I think this is going to be a great year for, like, you know, like indie films, and it's going to be a time for experimentation on, you know, new platforms, and it's going to open everything up. And I started just kind of write a little paragraph about what I actually feel about when I look at this year compared to last year and last year compared to the year before. And I just kind of started typing. And here is what came out, and I feel like I have to share it as it came out of the typewriter as I was typing. What I predict is that for the most part, large entertainment companies will continue to feature and reward the same people they always have. You will still see mostly prestige movies by white guy directors about white people. You will still see a lack of representation both behind the scenes and in front of the camera, both in movies and on television. I predict that progress will be continuous but maddeningly incremental. I predict that the diversity of the entertainment that you consume will continue to be, as it is now, largely a function of how willing you are to seek out more than just what's most heavily and extravagantly marketed. I predict that a significant part of the cultural conversation will continue to revolve around efforts to define other people's tastes out of existence or out of respectability, which means having a mind of your own will continue to require a high tolerance for scolding. Now, the good way to look at these kind of dire feelings that I sometimes have when I look at the difficulty that we have making change in culture is that it is still going to be necessary for people to seek out, and I do think it is easier to seek out than it ever has been, the things that you want to find that are different, that are interesting. And I think one of the mandates of projects like the blog that I write and also of the show, and one of the reasons we do What's Making You Happy this week, is to try to find those things that, you know, maybe people haven't seen, maybe people haven't heard of. But it is going to continue to be a sort of every person for themselves, I think, battle to find the things that are worth really loving, because there is no sea change toward all of a sudden it's all very democratic and meritocracy. And so if you want a concrete prediction, The Imitation Game wins Best Picture.
Yeah.
Because that's just kind of what happens. And that just feels like it's kind of the most predictable thing that could possibly happen.
But I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to predict that Ava DuVernay will win Best Director, and then everyone will be like, problem solved.
Yeah. That'd be interesting if it happened. I would be surprised if that happened, but I know exactly what you're talking about. I don't mean to make it such a downer prediction. It's just that if I'm talking about actual predictions, what I actually think is going to happen, I cannot possibly claim that I think anything is going to happen except a lot more of the same and a struggle to get to anything different.
Sure, but that strikes me as a more nuanced argument than some of the think pieces we've been reading the last couple of weeks about the blockbuster syndrome, the juggernaut fatigue that Stephen was mentioning, which seems to willfully ignore the fact that this was a year for Obvious Child and for smaller movies like that. Now, again, I'm whistling past the graveyard to kind of point out five or six of smaller films amid all this juggernaut thing. But the notion that it's crowding out creativity, crowding out the ability for independent filmmakers to make independent films, even if some of these films are not technically independent films, just think that that's a willful way of kind of ignoring something. And that's not what you're saying.
No, what I'm saying is that as it has been up to now, it's going to continue to be up to you to go and find it, because it's not going to take the place of the stuff that we get now as blockbusters, right? We're not going to start getting a totally different kind of blockbuster.
No, right.
That's what I'm saying. It's still going to be on the person to go seek it out, to do your own work in your own head and talk to your friends and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. And so that brings us to our final segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
Well, for the last couple of weeks, I have been on vacation. And one way that that has manifested itself is I haven't spent very much time consuming music. partly there's a little bit of a lull, you know, before the release schedule picks back up and I have to start writing about, you know, new records and everything. So I have three things that are making me happy in media other than music. One is that the sixth season of Archer begins this week, and I love Archer and I'm thrilled to be able to start mainlining it again after taking a little bit of time off from it. Thing two, during my vacation, I flew to and from Seattle, which is a long flight, and I watched three likely Oscar nominees that I can cross off the list of Oscar movies that I have to see in order to prepare for our Oscars omnibus. I have now seen The Theory of Everything, Birdman, and The Grand Budapest Hotel, and I'm feeling very, very smug about myself in terms of my preparation in advance for the Oscars omnibus. Finally, while I was in Seattle, I went to the ballet. I feel like that's personal growth for this guy. Of course, when I say I went to the ballet, I went to the Nutcracker.
Yeah, okay.
And
asterisk.
And I understand that there's an asterisk there. It was a very specific version of it. This is unfortunately the final season after 30 years of a version of the Nutcracker where all the sets and visuals, which are very, very lavish, were designed by Maurice Sendak.
Oh, right.
And it has this very Where the Wild Things Are visuals. Obviously, it's Sendak. Mm-hmm. As much as I found the ballet as inscrutable as you might think that I might, I'm sitting there like, oh, they're mice. I still thought it was beautiful. Obviously, Stravinsky's music is wonderful, and there's a reason that, like, everybody who goes to I go to the ballet, you go to the Nutcracker. There's a reason the Nutcracker is like the ballet you go to.
Right.
I enjoyed it and felt, I dressed up like a shoe salesman.
I was going to say.
And, you know, I wore,
dress up to go to the
wore
ballet.
Like nice pants and a tie.
Wow.
And I really felt like a shoe salesman. and I had a good time, you know, just playing against type a little bit. Mm-hmm. I've gone to the ballet.
Thank you, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week, sir?
All right. Well, when it comes to podcasts, the first step is admitting you have a problem. And so I've got two recommendations. I spent much of the time that I would have spent reading kind of digging into the archives of two podcasts that are new to me. The first one, Jessica Hit Me One Time.
Are you leaving? Are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date. Terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
Mouth horn.
That is the theme song, the opening theme song, and also the closing theme song, to a podcast called Do You Need a Ride? Hosted by the hilarious comedians Karen Kilgariff and Chris Fairbanks. Premise, they pick up a comedian in one of their cars and take him or her to LAX or away, sometimes other places, but mostly to or from LAX after they're coming back from or going to a gig. And they talk and they riff. And they do it, importantly, in a car, which leads to one of my favorite things about the show. I love the show for a variety of reasons I'll get to, but when Chris Fairbanks is driving and somebody is riding his bumper or somebody cuts him off, the kind of exasperated he gets is what I call universal dad. Uh-huh. I don't know why I find a young man getting exasperated the way a dad would so hilariously funny, but he'll say things like, so where are you going, on a date? Like that. I don't know why I find it hilarious, yet I do. So where to start? I guess James Adomian episode's really good. Todd Glass, Guy Branum, Andy Kindler, any of those are solid. The one with just Chris Fairbanks by himself is the one where he kind of gets exasperated, the way I mentioned. I love that show. The other one is called The Adventure Zone. Now, this is a little bit more established because it's the three brothers from the very funny podcast called My Brother and Me. It's those three guys and their dad playing D&D. Now, I'm speaking to the small subset of listeners right now who heard it's guys playing D&D and was like, oh, tell me more. To you, I say, this is the funniest D&D playing podcast out there. There are lots of them. This is the best one. Why? Because, again, chemistry and wit. There's only five episodes, as I speak to you now, that have dropped. You can get into it very easily. To the much larger group of listeners out there who say, people playing D&D, no thanks, I say give the first episode a try because it's funny. oh my God, it's funny. They do not take this stuff too seriously the way that some other podcasts do, and they're having a sincere amount of good fun that is just infectious. So that's two podcasts. One called Do You Need a Ride? The other called The Adventure Zone. Listen and thank me.
Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Kat Chow, what is making you happy this week, ma'am?
Well, what's making me happy this week is the comics of Connie Sun. If you go to ConnieWani.com, basically she's an Asian American comic artist who vowed, I think a couple years ago, to start making a comic every single day. Her comics, kind of in the way of Ali Brosh, tackle anxiety, depression, love, life, in this really stark but also uplifting way. And what I like about it is her style. So oftentimes she'll incorporate an animal. There will be this character that looks kind of like her. She's small. She's wearing a bun. She sort of has this melancholy demeanor, but at the same time is always a little hopeful.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Kat Chow.
Thank you.
Now, what is making me happy this week? From time to time on Twitter, I have to ask for recommendations for contemporary romance novels because I run out. And unfortunately, the writers that I like do not write fast enough and do not produce books at a quick enough clip for me. So I have to say on Twitter, someone tell me, and I tell them, you know, I like Kristen Higgins, I like Julie James, I like Shannon Stacy, I like all these people. Tell me who else I can read. And I really had gotten to the point where I thought, I've found all the ones that are going to be up my alley, and I've finished reading all of them and whatever. And then somebody said, you should read the Knitting in the City series by Penny Reed. And it starts with a book called Neanderthal Seeks Human, which is, I really don't know why it's called that. It's not a particularly relevant title. She's a really funny writer. Legitimately, like, these are comedic romantic comedies. Mm-hmm. So her way of writing about stuff is funny. She talks at one point in one of these books about my upstairs brain was arguing with my downstairs brain, which is the kind of thing you hear guys talk about a lot and you hear in women talking about their sex lives a little bit differently. You don't hear that quite as often from them. And so she has very funny ways of talking about stuff like that. It's kind of not explicit and yet not coy. It's just sort of funny. And she writes it's a very romantic book and unusual and has an unusual structure. And I think her priority is that she tries to make sure the women are always intelligent. They do sometimes silly things. They do sometimes slapsticky things, but they're not dumb. They're intelligent. And the reason this series is called Knitting in the City is that the woman is in a knitting group. And so the great thing about a romance series is that as soon as you see like the knitting group, you're like, oh, they're all going to have a book. And so then you know that then eventually you're going to get to read this one's book and that one's book and that one's book. And so I have just started this series and I'm actually now on the second one. But the first one, Neanderthal Seeks Human by Penny Reed, it's a fun book and it is right up my alley and it is a little goofier than some of the other ones that I read, but good. And I enjoyed it very much. And so thank you to Twitter for that recommendation. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, STEPHEN. You can follow Glenn at GH Weldon, WELDON. And you can follow Kat Chow at Kat Chow. That's KATCHOW. You can follow our producer, Jessica Reedy at Jessica_Reedy. And our producer, Lauren Migaki at L Migaki. That's MIGAKI. You can follow our esteemed producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in-and-out music, which you are tapping your foot to right now. So thanks to you guys for being here.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you back here next week. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. NPR's newest show, Invisibilia, debuts January 9th. Invisibilia looks at the invisible forces that shape human behavior, like how do other people's expectations physically change your brain, and the impulse to put things into categories, or the meaning of dark thoughts. From some of the people who created This American Life and Radiolab, subscribe to Invisibilia on iTunes now and don't miss a single episode beginning January 9th.